How are we doing this morning?
I got to tell you this. I just remember this story about my mom. Our house on Yale Drive in Bartlesville, our house faced south and faced Yale Drive, and my bedroom window was the corner over here. Come in, living room, bedroom, bathroom, and den was on this end. So my window faced Yale Drive, and it also faced the east side of the house, which was between houses. I didn't climb out that window because Mom and Dad's window's right there on that side of the house, so I climbed out the front one. So I got my screen, and some of you'll start nodding your heads, fixed. So when I went out the window, I knew how to get my screen back on to make it look like, you know, I hadn't messed with my screen. And so I was like stealth ninja, being able to get out of the window all the time. And so I would sneak out after we supposedly went to bed, right? And so four or five of us did this all the time. So I think it was Friday, Saturday night, we snuck out. I don't remember what we did. I just remember just coming back, and it was about this tall, so you kind of had to get a hope, you know, raise your window up and not hit the window when you jumped up so you could climb back in. So I got good at that because you couldn't leave something under the seal, because they're like, what's that for? Oh, it's to climb in my window. So you had to get good at jumping up on the seal and then climbing in. So I was a master at it, and I'd slither back in and get back in the room. So this one night I went back in, and it was like a movie scene. Of course, it's dark. I'm sitting there on the bed. I'm like, God, I'm hungry. And so I thought, well, I'll just go get something to eat. So I opened my bedroom door. You know, it's quiet. You know, it's like, okay, the lights are all off, so nobody's up. And so as I opened my door, bathroom straight ahead, Mom and Dad's bedroom's right there. And so I walk and get to the bathroom. You turn left, it goes through the dining room into the kitchen. And so it's quiet. And so I stopped at the bathroom. I'm listening. I thought, they must be asleep. So I turned to go into the dining room, and my mom smoked Pall Malls, non-filtered, for a long time. And so as I turned, I stepped in, looking into the kitchen, I see this figure sitting at the dining room table, and I see this smoke. It's like a movie scene, I swear. It's like, so I step in, and Mom doesn't say anything. She's just sitting there looking at me. I barely see her eyes. It's like, I just kind of froze. She goes, well? I was like, Mom, I'm sorry. She didn't say anything. I'm really sorry. I thought, shoot, she knows I've been gone. And she goes, what are you sorry for? I was already up. You didn't wake me up. I was like, oh, okay. I was just coming to get something to eat. She had no idea I'd snuck out. But look at this movie scene, like she's sitting there waiting for me. And I'm just like, oh, I'm busting so bad. But no, she thought, you didn't wake me up. I've been out here for a little bit, so I don't know how she didn't hear me, but she didn't. So years later, I had to tell her, Mom, remember when I came? She goes, yeah, I remember that. Yeah, we talked for a little bit at the table, and you went to, yeah. I said, I had snuck out. You what? You had been out? So I had to confess a lot of things. So Mom, when she did finally laugh, but anyway, a lot of stories that they're endless. I thought I was busted, so no way. So this place is real life, real people with a real God. I think, I believe that's what we're about here at Sandusky. And my hunch is you probably had some good things happen to you this week and some not so good things happen this week. So did I. It's kind of the way the week goes sometimes. And one of the reasons I think we love gathering here is because we believe there are real people here who aren't afraid to, they're not going to pretend to tell you that there's not some challenging things going on in their lives, and that there are, things that just aren't so great sometimes. And when you're a community like this that gathers around there, I believe there's hope, there's healing, there's the presence of God. So I hope today you've already felt, experienced the presence of Jesus a little bit. And that you can be real here. You can not be afraid to let your guard down, because I think there's hope and healing. I think there's a lot of that. So so today I want to start off. I have two groups to talk to today. I want to talk to those of you who would say, Paul, I'm really not a big Jesus follower. I'm just not. Somebody tricked me, you know, I'm here, somebody tricked me into lunch or brunch because it's Mother's Day and I came. I don't understand all of this, but I'm coming in today and I'm not sure that I would characterize myself as a Jesus follower. Okay? First, we're thrilled that you're here. Thanks for being here. We're honored that you're here. Thank you for taking a risk to coming into an environment where you'd say, I don't even know that I would say I believe who Jesus is, who he says he is. The other group I want to talk to you is those of you who have who would say, I am a Jesus follower, and I've been a follower for a long time, for a number of years. That's me. So I want to talk to two groups of people, and I want to start off with talking about those of you who say, I'm not really a Jesus follower. Then I'm going to come back to those of you who would say I'm a Jesus follower, because at the end, this is an all skate for all of us, right? For all of us as we take part in part two here of the series we're doing called King of Hearts. So I want to share a story with you, my first real impression of the local church. Rewind a little bit. I grew up in church, went to church 9 months, you know, before I was born. I was there. I've been in church most of my life, I would say, most of it. And we would go to church once, sometimes twice a week. I grew up in the Catholic Church, and so we would go to Mass, and if there's something else special going on, we would probably go. My grandmother would do this to my dad, and we'd show up. So sometimes we would, sometimes we wouldn't, but it's usually some sort of special event that they were doing, and we might go. But my first real impression of the local church is when we were attending the Christian church in Dewey, and I remember going to lunch at one of my mentors' house. We were just talking about him. Invited us over for lunch and a few other people, and I remember being standing in the living room. Everybody's eating and talking, and of course their conversations sounded like this. He would say, "Well, so and so's mad about this and saying this, and they're mad and angry about this, and they're mad at this person," and I would hear that, right? So the first deep-seated impression, kind of young in the Christian church for me. My first thought I had about the local church and in my life was the question, why are these people so angry all the time, right? That's what I'm seeing and listening to. And why does it seem like they're fighting at church all the time? And that began a little bubble of thought that eventually formed into a promise that I made myself, and it was this: I will never, ever, ever, ever work in a church if that's what it's about, right? Who would want to do that job, right? Well, here I am, and I've been here for a while, been at it for a while. So if you get nothing out of what I say today, you might want to write this down. Never tell God that you're never going to do something, right? I think he plays close attention to that. I recently told God, "God, I am never going to be a billionaire." So I kind of want to see what he does with that right there. So that was my first impression of the local church. I kept hearing this chirping going on all the time. Now, why did I tell you that? Well, the reason I tell you that is I want to introduce of what the title of the sermon today was going to be, right? But I didn't use. So the title of today's sermon was simply this: "It's not Jesus' fault that I don't believe." That was going to be one of the titles that I kind of thumbed around in my head. See, for many of you, you've had interactions with Jesus' followers, and from time to time, maybe it was with a business deal with somebody, and they quoted Bible verses every other paragraph, and yet, honestly, they ripped you off at the end of the business deal. Maybe you're in a dating relationship with someone, they had a Christian fish on the back of their car, but yet it ended up being a very abusive relationship. Maybe you've got a story, and maybe for some of you, the reason you're people who watch online isn't because it's comfortable, right? You don't have to get out of your pajamas to watch this online. And it's as close as you get to the church because maybe you have something in the past that the church did to hurt you, and this is as close as you can get online. For many people, the reason they don't follow Jesus isn't because of Jesus. The reason many people don't follow Jesus is because the way they've been treated by Jesus' followers, unfortunately. So if that's your story today, I want to invite you into a story. And if that's your story today, I want to tell you we understand. But not only do we understand, I'm going to share with you someone I think completely understands that. And for those of us who are Jesus followers, I want to talk about the fact of how serving can change that perspective if that's somebody's story. Now, if that's your story and you would say, well, the reason I don't follow Jesus isn't because of Jesus, it's because of Jesus' followers. If you, and I know I'm making this up, but if you were to have this conversation with Jesus and it went something like this: Jesus, with all due respect, I don't believe in you, but it's not because of you. It's because of Jesus' followers. I've got my scars. Do you know what I think Jesus would do at that point? I think he would get up and he would put his arm around you and he would say, first of all, I am so incredibly sorry that that's happened to you, but I understand. I think he would say, it happened to me too. And I think Jesus would begin to share a story, his story, with you. And I think he would, I believe he would share an invitation to you. In fact, I think he'd probably pull out the Bible and he'd open it up to Mark chapter 3. And I think he would begin to share this story. So we're going to be in Mark chapter 3. If you have a Bible, if you don't, it's on page 702, I believe, in the ones in front of you. So this is Mark chapter 3. And here's what I think he would share with you, beginning with verse 13. Jesus went up on a mountain and called to him those he wanted, and they came to him. Jesus told 12 and called them apostles. He wanted them to be with him and wanted to send them out to preach, to have the authority to force demons out of people. These are the 12: Simon, named him Peter; James and John, sons of Zebedee. Jesus named them Boanerges, which means sons of thunder; and Philip, Andrew, Philip, Bartholomew, Matthew, Thomas, James, the son of Alphaeus, Thaddeus, Simon the Zealot, and Judas Iscariot, who later turned against Jesus. You ever had somebody betray you? Right? Now, when I ask that question, the answer isn't yes. What the answer is, a picture of their face that comes to mind. When you think about that, you think about that person, right? Their face. And if someone betrayed you and you were to share that story with Jesus, I think he would put his arm around you and go, me too. I had that happen to me too. But that's just the beginning of the story. Look at verse 20. Then Jesus went home, but again, a crowd gathered. There were so many people that Jesus could not, and his followers could not eat. Now, you know it's a big crowd if somebody's getting between you and your barbecue, right? You know it's a big crowd if you can't even eat. That's a big crowd. Listen, Jesus was a walking megachurch everywhere he went. There was a lot of people that were around him all the time. So, but there's this little word, again, Jesus entered the house, right? He, again, and again, a crowd gathered, and there were so many people that he and disciples were not even able to eat. That's a lot of people bumping into you, right? It gets really interesting. Verse 21, when his family heard this, they went to get him because they thought he was out of his mind. Doesn't that make you feel a little bit better about your family? Just a little bit. Even Jesus had a little dysfunction in his family. This is going on, right? In fact, what we can surmise out of this text here is that some of the word of Jesus, the message of Jesus, the rumors of Jesus were getting out, and it was getting back to the family, and it was maybe sounding something like this. You know, Mary, your son says he's the Son of God. Hey, boys, do you know your brother's over here? He's saying he's the Son of God, right? Did you know your brother's said it again? And I think apparently there had been a family meeting and that Jesus was not invited to. Have you ever had one of those meetings, one of those family meetings? You have a family meeting, but there's a person that's not invited, apparently it was Jesus. And so his family says, hey, we know it's our brother, but he is out of his mind. Right? That's what they're thinking. He's lost it. He's out of his mind. The late novelist Pete Conroy had a very dysfunctional family growing up, very painful family growing up. And he basically, his novels were his kind of therapy, a kind of a therapy session for his readers to tell you how horrible his family life was. Okay? And so one night he's at a book signing, people are coming up, this couple walked up to him, and they said, hey, Mr. Conroy, we love your writings, but I tell you, your family, it's crazy. Your family's crazy. And Mr. Conroy looks up, takes his glasses off, kind of leans back, and he said, you know what I discovered? I've discovered there's crazy in every family, right? He said, in fact, if I were to go down the list of your relatives, I'd hit crazy pretty fast. He said, for instance, let's just try it. He goes, your mother, your father, your sister. And the husband's wife goes, whoa, 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 whoa. He goes, his sister, she's crazy. She is absolutely nuts, right? So what happens is especially if you grew up in a religious household where there's Bible verses all over the place, and yet if your hurt comes through your family, sometimes it's very hard to feel the love of God if that pain comes through your family. And if that pain comes through your family, Jesus would say, I understand. I have my own story, right? They thought I'd lost it, right? They thought I was out of my mind. We're still not done. Verse 22, check this out. But the teachers of the law from Jerusalem saying, Beelzebub is living inside him. He uses power from the ruler of demons to force demons out of people. Well, this is by far the worst thing anybody could say to Jesus, to say he's not from God. He's actually Satan, right? Which didn't make any sense. So when we look at the story of Jesus, if you have your story that you've been hurt by Jesus' followers, let me just tell you how this works. Let me look at it from Jesus' perspective, okay, in a span of just a few verses. Here's what we see. We see a friend who will betray him. Ever been there? Anybody? A family who wants to control him. Anybody? And a community who seeks to discredit him. All in just a few verses. And for many of us, that has kept our distance from Jesus. Not because of Jesus, but because of Jesus' followers. To which Jesus would say, I understand, I get it. I understand all of that. It's why what happens next is so important, because Jesus has a message for you and me. And remember, I got two groups I'm talking to today. I'm talking right now to those of you who say, I'm not really a Jesus follower. And we're not discounting your hurt. We're not saying you need to just get over it. That's not what we're saying. We're saying that Jesus understands, but he has a message for you and a message to you and a message to these people in this moment. Check out verse 23. So Jesus called the people together and taught them with stories. He said, Satan will not force himself out of people. A kingdom that is divided cannot continue, and a family that is divided cannot continue. If Satan is against himself and fights against his own people, he cannot continue. That is the end of Satan. In essence, what Jesus is saying is saying, hey, I know y'all got hurts. I get it. I totally understand. But see for yourself who I am, right? From their perspective, he's Satan. A lot of people saying, this is Satan in the flesh right here. Jesus is saying, hey, just watch me. Watch what I do. Judge for yourself who am I. Don't view our relationship through somebody else. Don't do that. I don't want you doing that, right? Don't view it through somebody else. And here's the challenge I have. Not discounting your hurt, not discounting any of that today, but if you allow that hurt, I allow that hurt, the people who have betrayed us, the people who have tried to control us, the people who have tried to seek to discredit us, if we allow them to keep us from Jesus, I think it makes it even worse. It makes it even worse if we buy into all that. What we want to do at Sandusky, we try our best. We want to create an environment, whether it's on Sunday or small groups or whatever, we want to create an environment so you can see Jesus for who he really is, right? Because there's a lot of talk out in the world about who Jesus is. And you have to be real careful about what you watch, see, listen to about who Jesus is out there today. It's scary. It really is. We're not discounting your hurt. We're not discounting the pain, but we're saying that Jesus is here for you, and decide for yourself. Jesus, the invitation is saying, see for yourself who I am. Don't view it through somebody else's eyes. Now, for those of us who are Jesus followers, today is a reminder of what a significant opportunity, a responsibility that you and I have to represent Jesus. And I got to be honest with you right now. I'm a little nervous about the remainder of this message. And the reason I'm a little nervous is I don't want to come across preachy. I don't want to come across judgmental. I don't want it to look like I'm wagging my finger at Jesus followers. I'm a Jesus follower, okay? It's not about, you know, we're not perfect, but there is a stewardship, a responsibility that every one of us has that would say, I am a Jesus follower. Everywhere we go, we have a significant responsibility because of who we represent. And while it's true today that the reason many people don't follow Jesus is because of Jesus' followers, the great news is, the exciting opportunity is exactly the opposite is true as well. The reason many people follow Jesus is because the way they've been treated by a Jesus follower. So it's true that way as well. It made such a difference in their life, they go, whoa, you love me so much. You serve me so much. You're such a generous, amazing person. What is it about you? And you say, it's not me, it's the person I met in Jesus. Would you like to meet him? Right? That's what's changed me. It's why one of the best ways to show people, I think, that God is for them is how well we serve them. And so I'm all for theology. Remember, I've been in this most of my life, but sometimes the greatest form of theology is serving people really, really well. Doing our best to serve them, the best we can serve them. Don't forget the calling. The invitation for you and me as Jesus followers is this. You're the light of the world. You're a city on a hill, right? You're going to stand out a little bit. You're not hidden. No one likes a lamp and puts it under a basket. When you go to work tomorrow, when you go to school tomorrow, when you post that online, all of that is amazing to say, hey, there's something different in my heart. I am a different person, right? There's peace of heart. There's purpose in my heart, and I love that. I love that I can recognize that. When Jesus goes on to say, he said, a lamp is placed on a stand where it gives light to everybody in the house. In the same way, let your good deeds shine for all to see, so everyone will praise your Father in heaven. He said, get out there. Let people see that. Every day, every interaction is an opportunity for us to serve and glorify God in a way that stops people in their tracks, and they go, wow, maybe, just maybe, all this is true. It's actually real. Maybe it'll stop them in their tracks. Maybe they'll reconsider. Maybe they'll start thinking about it. Last week, we talked about Mark 10, about this foundational scripture that we're using through the King of Hearts series. And here's the verse. It's verse 10:45. In the same way, the Son of Man did not come to be served. He came to serve others and to give his life as a ransom for many people. I know you know this, but I want to remind you, as Jesus followers, that every day, every single day is an opportunity for us to serve people incredibly well so they go, wow, maybe this whole thing is actually true. Maybe there's something to this. It's why those of you who serve as greeters, you know this, but the sermon starts as soon as somebody steps in that door. It's not right now. It's as soon as they step in the door. That's when the sermon starts, right? How you interact with people is an amazing gift. Don't take that lightly when you're talking to people when they first walk in the door. So what I want to do is I want to give you some examples. This is not an exhaustive list, but I want to give you some examples of how you can serve this week in our community, whatever your community is, wherever you're at, how you can serve. And again, why are we talking about this? Well, because one of the best ways to show people that God is for them and he loves them is how well you and I serve them. And so let me give you a handful of things. And just a reminder that everywhere we go is an opportunity to serve people in the name of Jesus. And by the way, when you serve out in the community, okay, you don't have to give them a list of Bible verses, all right? Because that freaks people out. I don't know what to say. I don't know what to say out of the Bible to them. You don't have to give them a list of Bible verses, right? You can just serve them with love and joy. And let me give you an example of what I'm talking about. Maybe you've seen this. You go into a restaurant, and we are still in a national labor shortage. You used to hear about this on the news. In fact, I just heard it again, but it's kind of been a story under the radar. Haven't heard this in a while. People are just quitting their jobs, are not showing up. They apply for jobs and never show up, even though they got the job. And it's hitting the retail industry and still hitting the restaurant industry very, very hard. And so, in fact, I saw this on the news. This was a little snippet. And they were talking about this report that we're still struggling with people in restaurants and retail, not showing up for work, quitting, working for a week, and just hard to get people. But they showed this sign. It said, "We are very short-staffed. Please be patient with us. Thank you." Big sign right by the register. You couldn't miss it when you walked in the door. You know why they had that sign there? Well, they told me in the interview thing. Because there are, and this is going to come a shock to y'all, but there are customers that have not been patient with them. Who'd have thought, right? What happens is, ironically, we get mad at the people who are there. We get mad at them. And I want to change that as Jesus' followers. So there are people working. They've shown up. They're there. They're just trying to do their best. They didn't quit. They're there every day working that job. So I want to give you something to say to them. And I've been doing this for a while just to get reaction out of people, and it's amazing. It just shocks people. Even people who are in high school or working fast food jobs, they just kind of taken back. So I want you to say this. You just walked them. If you're drive through, standing in line somewhere, picking up fast food somewhere, you just say this: "Thank you for being here." And they just kind of look at you like, "What? You're doing a good job." I'm telling you, this is so much fun to look at their face when you say this. They're not going to know how to respond, because I guarantee you, because you're the first person that's probably ever said this to them. "Thanks for being here. You're doing a good job." It's just so befuddling and so bewildering to them. And then they smile and say, "Thank you. Nobody's ever said that to me." Nobody's ever uttered those words. Here's the reality. No one's going to say that to them again unless they go to Sandusky, right? Nobody's going to say that to them. So tomorrow when you're going through the coffee line, when you're in the drive-thru, you can pause before you get your coffee and just say, "Hey, thank you for being here," and smile. That's it. Just smile at them. It's a deposit of grace. It's a deposit of being human to somebody else. But more than that, it's a deposit of being the light of the world in an industry where people are needing encouragement. They just need encouragement. Listen, that's a large number of people who work those jobs. They're trying to make a living. They're trying to pay the bills. They're trying to pay their house payment, pay their car payment, take care of their kids. They need a little bit of encouragement. That's number one. Number two, simply this: remember who we represent. Okay? Let's remember who we represent. Back in the day, I worked for a grocery store called Best Yet in Bartlesville, big grocery store. And when I first started working, at the very beginning, you had to wear a shirt and a tie. And on the tie, it had a logo of Best Yet, kind of an old thing that says Best Yet on it. So we had to wear these ties. I wasn't crazy about it, but as part of the uniform that you had to wear. So sometimes I would get dressed before I go to work, but sometimes I had to stop somewhere. And if I had to stop somewhere, I'm already dressed. So when I walk in, I have this Best Yet tie on. So I had to remind myself when I walked in, I'm representing Best Yet, right? Because they see the tie. It's already on. So I'd remind myself, that marked me to remember, don't forget who you're representing. It's Best Yet, because people are seeing this. If you're a Jesus follower, we can't forget who we represent. Now, I'm not saying that we can't have a bad day. We're not perfect by any means. But I'm telling you, every single day is an opportunity to provide grace as we serve people. I learned this from Truett Cathy. Truett Cathy is the founder, creator of Chick-fil-A. And he said, "Do you know the international sign when someone needs encouragement?" I thought, this is going to be good. Right? He goes, "This is not just for America, this is internationally." Right? He said, "The international sign if someone needs encouragement is if they are breathing." If they are breathing, they need encouragement. That's the international sign. So what if, Sandusky, we this week as Jesus followers said, "You know what? Whether it's the barista, the person at the ball game, the teacher, the person checking us out at the store, can we encourage them just a little bit? Give them some encouragement, because let's never forget who we represent." All right? Third thing, simply, be generous. Let's be generous. I'll never forget this. This is heartbreaking to me. There are restaurants, probably even close to our church and all over town, and a lot of other places that do not like Sundays. They're open, but they don't like Sundays. And the reason they don't like Sundays is when churches go to lunch, our reputation as Christians is we don't tip well. And we're sometimes cranky when we go to their restaurants. That's why they don't like Sundays. They don't like to be open on Sundays. The people who serve don't like to be there. If you go out to eat today with your mom, could you just leave a good tip? Just leave a good tip. I remember when I first started going to the Christian church, Bible tracts were a big thing back then. You guys probably remember Bible tracts. Some of you have been around a while. And there was this one specific Bible tract. I don't know if any of you remember this, but no kidding, it looked like a $100 bill. You laid it down, it looked like a $100 bill. You're just like, whoa. When I first saw it, I said, who's leaving money laying here? All those are tracts. And so you leave it on the table, and when the waiter and waitress walks over and they look down, they go, whoa, dude just left me $100, you know, as a tip. But when they pick it up, they realize it opens. It's not a $100 bill, right? And inside of it, kid you not, it says this, disappointed, question mark. You won't be when you understand the value of eternal life with Jesus. That's what it says on the inside. Now, let me be really, really clear. That is an awful idea. And if it sounds like I'm being critical, it's because I am being critical, okay? And as I told you before, if anybody's offended, my email address is jimmy.foreman@sandusky.com, okay? So, but I'm telling you, I firmly believe no one's going to get to heaven and share that story. That's how I came to Jesus. I found this fake $100 bill on the table when I was a waiter or a waitress. Nobody's going to say that. For many people, they go, oh, there it is again. There it is again. And hey, I'm all for being financially free, okay? I'm all for that. But let's remember to be generous, and I'm not just talking financially, because that's usually where our mind goes. Let's be generous in encouragement and in praise, because everyone is breathing and everybody needs encouragement. Everybody does. Four, practice humility. We'll talk about this more another time, but humility and being humble is kind of an odd thing, because if I were to tell you, hey, Sandusky, you know what? One of the best things about me is I'm a humble person. Right? I've already told you a lot of times that I'm not, okay? It's not me. I fail at that a lot. So what you have to do is practice humility. I remember coming out of church one day when I was in Arizona, and we were in the process of building the new youth building in the skate park, and this guy had become my friend. We met and at a dinner and talking, and we just struck up friends. He's retired. He was a multi-billionaire. And I mentioned him before. He was the one that come to church in overalls, and you look like that guy didn't have a dime to his name, right? He'd wear his old boots, overalls, and usually a hat, and when he'd come to the building, he'd take it off and be a gentleman, and you'd think he just crawled off the tractor. This guy's a multi-billionaire and nicest guy, funny guy. And so we're out at the building, and we're looking where they broke ground, the new youth building, and we're standing there, we're talking to the financial guy at the church, and he was kind of explaining things, we noticed that my wealthy friend's over here picking up trash over where the skate park was being built. He's over there been out picking up trash and gathering it in his cups, and I don't remember what else it was. So this guy's a billionaire, and he's over here picking up trash. And so some of the staff are kind of horrified by this, so the executive pastor runs over and said, no, you don't have to do that. He said, we got people who clean up the trash. We got people who do that, clean up the grounds and stuff. And he said, you don't have to do that. And so my friend stands up and he puts the last bit of trash in a trash can, and he says, no, you don't understand. He said, it's an honor to clean up my father's world. This is my father's world. At that point, all of us started looking for trash to pick up. We're like, let's go pick up trash, right? Practice humility. Let's take the low place. Number five, serve at Sandusky. Get involved. We'd love for you to go out in the lobby. It's on the Welcome Center. Sign up for drive-through prayer if you're available at those times. Look in the bulletin and ask yourself, where are the opportunities I can get involved? We need more bodies in the nursery right now. We got a lot of babies, a lot of little kids need taken care of that need loved on and shown encouragement. We need that right now. Look at those. How can I get involved? Listen, you'll never understand what the church can do for you until you understand what the church can do through you. That's good. Again, you'll never understand what the church can do for you until you understand what the church can do through you, right? Then number six, just start saying this to people or write them a note, send it to them in an email. Just say, I see you, I believe in you, I'm for you. That's it. I see you, I believe in you, and I'm for you. I got your back. Then finally this one, the second mile service. Let's just go to second mile at work this week. Let's just go to the second mile. Let's go beyond our job description and wow people, because here's why. One of the best ways to show people that God's for them is by how well we serve them. It's pretty simple. It's pretty simple. Send them a note. Encourage them. When you're on the phone, encourage them. Serve them that way. Now, I want to go back to those people who are not Jesus followers. I want to say this to you. My mentor would say, if you remember at the beginning of the story, he was talking about so-and-so's mad at so-and-so, and these people are upset about this and don't like this. And I remember asking him later, Cecil, one of the things I noticed about you is you never got resentful towards these people you hear all the time. You never got resentful, and you've been following Jesus for years, and you never let the criticisms of what people might say about you or somebody you know deter you from coming to church. You never allowed that to happen. And I'm telling you, if you've been hurt by somebody, by a Jesus follower, these words from my mentor, they're there for you today. He said this. He said, there is a big difference between Jesus and Jesus followers. Only one of them's perfect. And he said, that applies to you as well. I was like, yes, sir. Got it. So, invite the worship team back up here. To close today, for those of you who have kept your distance from Jesus, let me just ask you a couple of questions. Have you ever been betrayed? Jesus understands. Have you ever been hurt by a Jesus follower? Jesus has too. He's got scars to prove it, just like you do. But the bigger question is, do you want help? Because Jesus is ready to help. He's ready to listen to whatever you want to throw at him, whatever you want to try to understand. The only question is really, is are you ready? Because, and maybe today is the day you say, you know what? Today is the day that I need to come home, right? I've been hurt. Yeah, I've got my scars. Yes, I've been betrayed more than once. But he's saying, hey, only one of us is perfect. Only one of us can heal you. Only one of us can redeem you or save you from all that. Only one of us can take those scars and actually create a purpose out of it. And that one is me, your Savior. He's saying, I'm the only one who can do that. Only one can turn all that around for you. So he basically says, you know, will you come home and just put your faith in me instead of everything else that you've tried? And just try it for yourself. I'm not asking you to jump in both feet. I'm just asking you to, maybe you got questions. Maybe you just thought, I don't get all this. And why you people do this every week. And why you live the way you live. Why do you choose to do that? Well, I'll tell you. So will 50 other people. They'll tell you why. And why does it make such a difference in your life? Why do you do what you do? If I didn't do this, I'd probably want, well, if I didn't get that far, if I never got this far to start even starting this, one, actually, I'd either be dead, literally dead, I wouldn't got out of my 20s, or I'd probably been a diesel mechanic, probably what I would have been. So why do this? Why live this way? Because there's something different about it. Life makes sense to me now when it didn't used to make sense. It makes sense to a lot of people who it didn't make sense to. They say, you know what, I'm going to change my life. Yeah, I've dealt with some people in church. So I thought, why are they that way? This is true. Why are people that way in church? Of all places, shouldn't we be loving each other and taking care of each other? Yes, we should. It's different. And I admit, it's different. It's hard to get rid of your past sometimes. But Jesus is the only one who can fix it. So if you just got questions, we want to help you with the question. We want to try to get you some answers. But I'd encourage you. Man, there's nothing better than this life. And for those of you who are Jesus followers and been for a long time, man, you got opportunities every day for people who are in that spot, who are questioning and wondering, is there something better than what I'm living right now? Just serve them. Just love on them. Right? You don't have to quote John 3:16 or anything else. Just love on them. Serve them. Trust you, it'll make a difference in their life. So let's stand. I'm going to pray for you and we're going to sing. And if you have questions, need prayer, whatever it is, we're here. Father, you are truly the only one that can change lives. We try it. We try to figure it out. We try to buy it on Amazon. We can't make sense of it. We can't make it work. Lord, some of us have been walking the same path for a long time, and we're getting nowhere. God, for those people, I pray, Lord, that you would speak to them. Speak to their mind. Speak to their heart. Let them know you're there. Let them know there is something different. There is something better, way better. And for those of us who have been followers for a long time, God, tomorrow morning,